Okay, last we spoke, about the power, the koach that an am can have, and its significance vis-a-vis the rest of the Jewish people. Today, Rav Tachlis is going to continue on that theme. To be brutally honest, a lot of the book is very, very repetitive. It's hard to know how much to do and how much to skip. You know, it's not just about the chedushim; it's really about the build-up, as it were. And he built up a lot. So a lot of times you're going to read this and say, "Well, didn't we do this already?" And the answer will be, "Yes, he said it another way, but he's bringing you another proof to this fact, or he's bringing you another proof to this fact." Sometimes he really says things that are big chidushim.
Part of what's impressive about the book is not so much the literary sense, but the fact that there are so many different proofs to it. If you just reevaluate, if he's just reevaluating the things that he already knows, and just in retrospect the things that he already knows, how many different times these things come up?
Here's the question. He will get to this today. If that's true, then why took him so long to figure this all out? And he writes this amazing book full of long, drawn-out proofs extolling the virtues of Eretz Yisrael, which he himself completely rejected until the Holocaust.
We already spoke about this. Even when we look at the proofs, we kind of feel that he's forcing the proof, which is okay.
Not always.
Plenty.
Well, it's the same thing with the Ptolemaic Revolution. There comes like a tipping point, or even in science, by the way, there's an accepted science that most things seem to agree with, and there's always outliers, meaning a lot of these things came up and they were rejected or they weren't taught, or things that there's even today, and so a lot of the Haredi yeshivas, a lot of these things aren't necessarily taught.
Right.
But there comes a point where there's so many of them that they start to challenge the basic paradigm, and then the paradigm shifts. It's a very common theme in science as well.
In Judaism?
In anything.
In anything.
Interesting. Okay. If he comes to realize, then everyone comes to agree and say, oh, there was a thing that we totally rejected, now we think is absolute truth.
No, nobody's agreeing yet.
No, it happened. It happened with the Copernican Revolution.
Now that you pointed out, I think you're correct. Mm-hmm. But within a certain...
I think also the 4th of July after the independence, America realized that it would have been better off with the British.
Yeah.
You're equal, by the way. There's no more British here than there are Americans.
Anyway. I would comment, but I'm enjoying my 4th of July watermelon.
Enjoy it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It's going off.
What?
Yes, let's read.
Oh, Nira Lomar. Im yaskim yitzron elyon, if God will agree, ayidei shluchav shlamata lasot kibbutz Yisrael be'eretz Yisrael. At least before it happened. כמו שכתב הברבנר ספר מאמר משמי ישוע, אז הברבנר wrote, וזה לשונו, ועל ידי הגויים עצמם יהיה הנס הזה. The Maharal said that the miracle will be through the nations themselves. Obviously, I don't know what you think about when you read a run of Barbanel like this, what are you thinking of? Al yidei hagoyim atzman yeh hanes hazeh.
You went,
right. Of course, remember, the Barbanel was writing it way before it. Rav Tachta was writing it long before it, somewhere before it. וכן כתב מהריווח, והקדם עדן יעקב, שהשם יתברך ייתן בלב המלאכים להכיר אמת. God will place it in the hearts of the kings to recognize the truth. אז, then, אף קודם בניין מן המקדש, תוכל הארץ לאסוף בתוכה כל בניה. Then the land will be able to gather into all of her children, אם ירצו לעלות אליה, ושלא תישאר אף פרסה בארצות הגולה. I think that line is very interesting and very fraught with danger. I'll read it again. קודם בניין בית המקדש, then before the building of the המקדש, תוכל הארץ לאסוף בתוכה את כל בניה. The land will be able to gather in all of her children, אם ירצו לעלות אליה. Only if they want. Meaning, I think we generally assume, and I think incorrectly so, that when Mashiach will come, Geula is a coercive process. You don't have a choice. Right? Mashiach comes, all the Jews have to go to Eretz Yisrael. But is that true?
Well, he's even saying something else.
All the Jews that wish to stay.
It could. It can.
Not that
it will. If they want. If they want.
All the Geula.
Right.
There are several points that could come out of this. The first of all is there's a discussion that that the borders will expand.
We're gonna get to that directly right now. Okay.
So this could be an allusion to that.
Correct. No, it is not. You'll see. It could be. It is.
Okay.
It is.
So
yes.
The
very good.
Is that we'll say this week's parsha, last week's parsha,
next week's parsha too. The Gvulot, right?
That, you know, that in order to accommodate everybody, the borders will expand. Okay. So that's stage one. The other possibility is Tochal to come. Just because they could come and they don't come doesn't mean in the final days that they won't be shat here, the ingathering.
He really envisioned, and maybe not, but he really did envision this idea that given the opportunity, everybody, meaning after the Holocaust, to him, the idea that Jews after the Holocaust wouldn't move to Eretz Yisrael wasn't imaginable.
Yeah.
Right? Or you see it from the way he talks. He just, why would anybody, after seeing what we've seen, want to live under the control of another nation anymore?
But he's also saying that not everybody's accepting what he's saying straight away.
Yeah, true. He's true.
So he may think they're bonkers, but he knows there's a reality of people who won't get it straight away.
He's alluding to that, maybe. I will quote you the name, the words of Rama Mipano. He was asked, what is it says in the Gemara? Dibru chachamim b'lashon havai. Chachamim sometimes spoke in, all right, translated for me, rhetorical exaggeration. He used rhetoric, meaning you can't take everything they say literally. You know, now we're learning the Agarita. Oh, you learn the Agarita, you realize that a lot of Agarita isn't literal, it has to be taken figuratively. Vikasha. It's difficult. The words of Chazal have to be exegeted. What do we learn from Chazal if they're talking simply in exaggeration? Tshuva, the answer he gives is, Lo chachamim bilvadamu, ala dibrat tovar lashon havai. Torah also spoke in exaggeration. Arim gdolot ubitzurot bashamayim. Meaning what? So the Torah said that there were great fortified cities in the heavens.
The Torah didn't say that.
What?
The Torah didn't say
that. Navi says
that.
Tibru neviim
lashon havai.
One second. That's from Devarim.
The Raglim said that.
What?
Didn't the Raglim say that?
The Torah is quoting them, I guess?
Yeah, but it was the Meraglim who exaggerated.
Good question. I didn't think about that. So, since I didn't, I'm going to skip it. Dibru Nevi'im Lashon Havai. The Nevi'im spoke also in exaggeration. Tibakah Aretz L'Kolam. The earth opened up from their voices. I'm in Ot Dalid, chapter 2, number 4. Mishash and Mishach Shlomo. Shlomo was anointed. So, do we really think that the earth opened up? It's an exaggeration. It's a poetic license. That's what we would say. Why do we use poetic license?
To make a point.
Right. So the mar of Agarita. Okay. Who's he talking? Zohar, maybe. Ki arim gdolot b'sorot shamayim hu kamash ma'o. He says, no, it's not el lashon havai. It's exactly what it means. Shehin b'tzurot b'marom. The cities in the heavens are fortified in the heavens. Shein shivim sarim shamala. You know, you have to have like air rights. You have to have airspace rights in order to enter into our airspace. Otherwise, the Israeli Air Force will stop you. So the Ribbono Shel Olam also set air rights for Eretz Yisrael. And the Shivim Sarim is a very, very well-known concept in Israel studies, we'll call it, and the limited Kabbalistic ideas that I know about, that it says, Enei Hashem Elokecha Taba, maybe Yishid Hashem Arachavishana, right, that there's one land in the whole world that the Sarim, the ministering angels, have no dominion over, and that's Eretz Yisrael. Every other place, somehow God deals with them through intermediaries. But here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu deals with them through directly. Af anunomar, so we shall also say, but tibakar tzakolam, what does it mean? That the earth shatters. Eretz Yisrael shehi pa'amim mitkapelet. Sometimes the land folds over. Remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Yaakov, Ki'ilu, when Yaakov was lying on Har HaMoriah, right, where he dreamt the dream of the ladder, so it's the land that you're dwelling. So the Midrash says that it folded up under him somehow. Okay? Pa'amim mitrachevet. Sometimes the land expands. Ketam, v'rachva v'nasva l'mala. Alkein nikre, therefore it's called Eretz HaTzvi, the land of the deer. I guess because the deer sometimes folds himself up, sometimes stretches himself up. Right.
The skin of the deer, when you when you take off the skin of the deer, it expands and contracts. Also, like when you try
the
to
skin
make
expands and contracts.
I think so.
There's an idea from Ayala to Shachar that you see the deer up and down in the vault.
Who brought that last time? Somebody mentioned that idea last time.
I wasn't here last time.
I did. You see it in different.
Ola Abukar. Yeah, yeah. You did mention it, but
yeah.
That wasn't his shot, right?
Yeah, not me.
That wasn't his shot.
Ola Shachar was.
Ola Shachar was supposed to be like a continuous thing, and my take was that it was not.
Right. We rejected your shot last week. Okay.
Free country.
What? This.
What?
Okay.
Huh. It's a free country. No, it's not. It's an expensive country. Okay. But we love it. That's in the news now.
At least cottage cheese is cheaper.
A little bit.
That was nasty.
Now milk is going to be cheaper.
Milk's going to be cheaper?
Well, they're trying to pass laws to make milk cheaper.
What about apartments?
No, that's just...
I think a bunch of young people decided they wanted to have a... Like a hangout, you know what I'm saying, for a couple of weeks?
Just smoke out, really.
Really, seriously. The whole Knesset is going crazy. Okay. I lost my spot. I'm a train of thought. What does it mean? Ah, ki al ken nikra eretz tzvi. Av machut shlomo. Baka v'rachva. Kol ha'efshar b'chok metzi ata shel ata sha'a. The land expands and contracts according to the needs of the moment. Ki v'at sh'ayati v'sheva kisei Hashem. Because Shlomo HaMelech, I mean, in times of Shlomo, it expanded according to that need, because it was going to sit on the kingdom of God. Remember, in the times of Shlomo, the kingdom expanded. The Chachamim spoke in words of exaggeration. Meaning, you think that they're just joking, expands, it contracts. No, Eretz Yisrael literally will expand to meet the needs of the Jewish people. Okay, there's a word of praise to the Chazal. The words of Chazal are not negated; they're not nothing. Says we have to be learned into every word of Chazal. I'll add on. That's why it was so important, because there were so many Jews during that time, so Eretz Yisrael had to expand to meet the needs. Hare, behold. Because the Jewish people gathered together, and it expanded in length and in width. Remember, Shlomo built on Beit HaMikdash later. That was when Shlomo was anointed. This is an aspect of Eretz Yisrael. I never really realized. Remember, I think I mentioned this to you before. Rav Kook relates to Eretz Yisrael as a living, breathing organism. You know what I'm saying? Like those who study Torah to Eretz Yisrael, they really relate to Eretz Yisrael in that way. So here you see a shade of this as well. You know, we talked about Bataki Eretz at Yoshevea, right? And Eretz Yisrael has a neshama. Rav Kook writes. So here you also see this idea that Eretz Yisrael, it expands and contracts to meet your needs. Almost like, lahavdil, your skin. You get fat, you don't like explode. Right? It finds a way. And then you lose some weight.
It's personified a lot in various different midrashim, like the idea of the Shemitah.
That's right. That's right. I mean, it's not midrash. That's Shem of Sukkim.
Yeah.
Right. But there's this notion that Eretz Yisrael is live. Okay, one second. I'm going to go to Yosef Shalom Mishnah.
What? You're standing on this big rock, and all of a sudden the rock comes alive.
It's like Star Wars.
Or something.
Wait, you and the Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back. Right. Famous movie. This is no asteroid. Please. Okay. That's like, isn't that like one of the first Star Treks or something?
You can go back further. It's Never Ending Story.
The Next Generation.
Never Ending Story was the first one.
Somehow I was into Star Trek The Next Generation, even though I didn't like the original. I was into Picard. Okay. Tzali makom she'alim b'Yerushalayim. Nobody ever said, there's no room for me in Yerushalayim. That was one of the nisim of Yerushalayim. Kavana ha da'amu eretz Yisrael eretz tzvi katuv. He says the same thing, kavana. What does it mean? It's like a deer. K'mosh ha'adam osel l'tinok beged. You make for a child of clothing. U'machpilo tov osel lo kamet. How does he translate that? And you fold it? Are you with me over there, Johnny? You have that, you, where I am? Or does, how does he read? What does he, what was it? You make for him a?
Seam.
A seam?
Seam. So that
he folds it over and makes pleats.
Pleats. Thank you. Kashi yudal, yudrachem abegin. Right? That's why we have pleats of pants. As your thighs get larger, right? Then the pleats take over. Kumokin ha'aretz. Same is true of Eretz Yisrael. Shim en Yisrael aleha himekumetet. If there are not Jews on it, it folds up. It was according to the value, the amount of people living there. Okay, so I have to stop here. I mean, I'm going to say it either later or repeat it again. This idea, he says, it's a proof that the Eretz Yisrael is a shayach to Bnei Yisrael. Why? Because when the Jews live on it, it expands. And when the Jews don't live on it, it contracts. And when I saw this, I know this will be controversial, but I immediately thought of Gaza. Immediately thought of Gaza. Because I remember when the time came for the disengagement, and you know, this will be politically sensitive, and you know, you're going to attack me on the internet. There was a big article from Sharon. Like, the thing that didn't make sense was, Ariel Sharon, he was like the guy who was in favor of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Mavis, he was like, he conquered like the whole Sinai, and he conquered over the Suez Canal, right? Conquered over the Suez Canal, and he wanted to go all the way to Damascus, and he conquered swaths of land, and he was as in favor as anyone in Begin's government of settling the Shtachim. He was the hugest supporter. So how come all of a sudden he changed his mind? So I remember quite vividly, there's a very, I think, interesting article, or I would say surprising article in the New York Times about this very question. And he answered it very simply. He said, there are not enough Jews there. He said, we can't justify it by the numbers. He said, there's 5,000 Jews. And there's 1 million Arabs. He said, if there were 50,000, if there were 100,000, then I could do something about it. But if there's only 5,000, what am I supposed to do? I can't justify the military. You could argue his point. But I think that it's interesting, like, if you look at Rav Teichel in this way, it says that the land of Eretz Yisrael is very much like it's like a pair of pants. You know what I'm saying?
Another thing you can see is, my father used to say this a lot, and he quoted a midrash, I wish I could remember the spot, but if you take a look at aerial photographs of Israel, and you take a look at where the Jewish people are settled,
yeah,
it's always green. And if you take a look at the areas where people are a large block of Arab settlement, it's always deserty. And it's not just because of the fact that they serve, because you have one right next to the other.
Right.
And you'll still see the outline of where the Jewish settlements are and where the non-Jewish settlements are. The only thing that does grow, in Beshefa for the Arabs that live in Israel.
Mortars? Even those, rockets?
No, olives.
Bullets?
Olives.
Oh, okay.
And the reason for why is because there's a possibility that when Yaakov blessed Esav, he told him that his blessing would be
Achar b'chatishan.
Achar b'chatishan, but he also gets mital shamayim, mimal, yishmanei haaretz mitachat. So the olives will grow b'shefa for them. And they'll still
they're not Yishmael. They're not, but that's not Yishmael.
No, sir, but it's av, necessary.
They grow olives. Nice. Anyway, it's also nice. Struck me, I remember quite clearly, during the, I would say, was it the year 2000, 1999, 2000, I was on a rabbinic mission. We were brought by the One Israel Fund, and we went to all these places. And they're explaining to you, if you've ever looked at a map, it's worthwhile to look at a map once, you'll see that but when they were in the middle of all these Heskeme Oslo, right, there was Shetach A, Shetach B, and Shetach C, which still exists. A is under total Palestinian control, B is under joint control, or it was under joint control, now it's under total Israeli control, and C is under is Jewish land. And it's just obvious. It's quite clear what's area C and B. What was that dependent upon? Where there were Jewish settlements. Meaning where Jews lived, that's where the army had to maintain. That's where the Israel had to keep. Where Jews didn't live, that's where they didn't keep. It was simply a matter of that fact. It wasn't a question of anything else. And you know, I think it's very sensitive to say it, because then you're laying blame, and I think it's fair to say, on ourselves in a sense. Who's responsible for the land? If you see, meaning people say, well, how could it be that Eretz Yisrael, like, it's part of the Gula, it should expand. I think the Rosh Hashanah could very legitimately, he's going to be sad he missed this, could very legitimately look back, jet lag still, it's hard, could very look back at us and say, are you guys nuts? I expanded the land ready for you to settle. Meaning you had, I gave you a land, and you built it up beautifully, 1967, and you needed more space. Legitimately, so what did I do? I gave you more space, and what did you do with it? Nothing. Square. You did nothing. So who's to blame? Who are we to say, oh, this is a proof that it's not Mashiach? No. That the most moving line that Rav Teichel has here is, Zez Siman She'eretz Yisrael Shayecha B'Yisrael. He didn't say only when it grows. The words he used was, he said, She'ein K'mo Kein Haaretz She'im Ein Yisrael Aleha He Mitko Metet. The fact that the land will contract, that Eretz Yisrael will contract when Jews are not living on it, that's the greatest symbol that it is Eretz Yisrael. Am I preaching to the choir here? Like, no arguments? You like totally agree with me? That's fine. All right. I think you all agree with me. I mean, it's all good. You know, but I thought I would get a... Where's Aaron when you need a good fight?
Seriously. When you need a fight.
What?
Sam Rabbi, give a story when the fox is on the mountain.
What do you mean? No, I'm not saying...
He's saying you learn your lekachim from the good and the bad.
Learning what?
The lekachim. Jews will contract when they're not here and will expand when they're not
here. Right. So, but that... And issue number two is that lays the blame of losing part of Eretz Yisrael not on the people that are here. No, not the chilin that are here.
It doesn't lay it on the chilin.
Right.
It lays it on the...
lays on the people that never came.
No, it doesn't. It lays it on us.
No, it lays it on the people that never came.
I don't think so. I think it lays it on the people in Yad Binyamin.
Why?
Because the people in Yad Binyamin could otherwise have gone to Shechem and settled on some mountaintop and reclaimed the land.
That's not fair.
Everybody, I think it's not fair. I think it's very fair. I think that...
If you would have gone to Shechem, they would have come here. That makes no difference.
I don't think so. I think that there's a defined area.
They would have come here.
They wouldn't have come.
If there were 10 million Jews, you'd have to put them somewhere. That's the fight about the apartments. There's not enough apartments. You could say there's simply not enough. There's not enough. They'd have to build a gazillion more in order for the price to go down. It won't go down until they build more housing.
And they'll build them in Lod, and they'll build them in Ramla, and they'll build them in Rehovot.
They could build them anywhere. That's exactly the point.
But they won't.
Well... If they do, they could fill them easily, correct?
I don't know about that.
You don't think so?
I think that if you built...
You could build 30 Yeshivim and fill them in an instant. Without a doubt. Depends on where you built them.
In theory,
you wouldn't have to build
theory,
them...
In theory, you could, but I don't think that there would be people who would be willing to move out.
Why?
Move where? It's not so far anymore.
Oh.
I don't think people would be willing to move to Ayelet HaShacha.
Have you been to Rehovah?
I've been to a lot of the places.
So, uh-huh. Rehovah is on the 5. Literally on the 5. How far is it from Petah Tikva?
And how much is it growing every year?
What? Because they won't let them build. That's exactly the point. Well, you think they would? They wouldn't.
In Ariel, the amount of money that they have, a number of houses that are being built, the things that are being issued are not necessarily filled up right off the bat.
Because people are afraid they're going to
shut down. It's not like
shut
people down on the streets. I mean, there are people on the streets, but they're not the people that are looking for apartments.
No, the people looking for apartments are young people who can't afford a house. It's very expensive.
So where are they living?
They're renting very small apartments.
Okay, so they're renting. When they move out of these small apartments, there'll be small apartments available. Seriously, they have to go somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Anyway, the image.
It's not like they're sitting there, floating in midair.
These poor, young people are living in tents.
Some of them aren't so young.
They're living in tents. Don't you feel bad for them? I saw a picture of these two women. They had to do yoga in the middle of Tel Aviv. It's terrible. Ube emet.
I really feel bad for those people living in a Beit Tzedek and designer apartments that are too small.
No, it's hard.
Really?
Why? Like...
You have a problem. Don't live in Tel Aviv. They had a discussion today, right, on Tal and Aviad. I don't know if you listen to Israeli radio in the morning.
No.
Quintessential Tel Aviv Israeli radio.
I try not to.
And they were basically saying that from their perspective, they see no problem at all with what was going on in Tel Aviv because they think it's a natural progression of cities. Because this happened to Tel Aviv in the past and it'll happen again.
But everybody moved out?
Everybody in the 50s and 60s thought that Tel Aviv was too crowded and moved out of Tel Aviv, and then their parents wanted to, their next generation wanted to come back for cultural reasons. Their children are now having a difficulty, and they're going to set up some new place to be able to go live in for a little while.
They can't, though. It's too expensive.
It's not necessary. Go to other places. Go to Nes Ciona.
Go to Yad Binyamin. Buy a house here.
Sure.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Have cost in Modine.
Not you know what cost? Areas.
Forget England. You know what the cost in Modine? You know how's cost in Modine?
Doesn't cost what it costs here.
Yes, it does.
It does.
More.
No,
it does. Trust me, it does.
New houses on paper.
It's close. Okay. באמת דיבר הגון אבל המפורש במדרש רבה בפסוק כי ירחיב השם אלוקיך. It's in the Midrash. אפשר שהקדוש ברוך הוא מרחיב את ארץ ישראל? Is it possible that God expands the land? אמר רבי יצחק, המגילה הזאת, it's like a מגילה, right? אין אדם יודע כמה ערכה וכמה רחבה. You have no idea how big it is. כשנפתחת, היא מודעת כמה היא. When he opens up, you know how much she is. כך ארץ ישראל, כל רובה הרים וגבעות, it's mountains and valleys, שנאמר בארץ אשר אתם עוברים שם למשתה, ארץ הרים וגבעות, to land in mountains and valleys, ארץ אשר השם לוקח דורש אותה תמיד, עיני השם לוקח בה, מראשית השנה, ועל אחרית השנה. כשישרה אותה הקדוש ברוך הוא מנין, הקדוש ברוך הוא will take the mountains and flatten it out and give you more space now. No problem. Okay? שנאמר, how do we know what's going to happen? שנאמר, כל גי ינסה בכל הר וגבעה ישפלו, and they will be lowered. והיה העקב למישור והרחסים לבקעה. Okay, all the mountains will become flatlands. אותה שעה היא מודעת מה, he then you'll know who God is. הרי, כל דברים שרבותינו הגאונים כלולים דברי המדרש. Right, the words of all these rabbis, the Hasidic rabbis, are in the Midrash. כששורים ישראל עליה, when the Jews live on in Eretz Israel, מודעת כמה היא גדולה, בלי גבול ומידה. Then its boundaries are immeasurable. והכל לפי יישוב שישראל יושבים עליה, מתפשטת ומתרחבת בכל עת ובכל זמן. The more Jews are living on it, the more the land expands to meet the needs. One second. V'im ken, and if so, katnuta shel arteinu ba'et hazot, lo yehi ikuv al kibutzoteinu akledi b'tolcha b'zod Hashem. You say, ah, it's so small, how's it going to take all these people in? No problem, don't worry. Ki az tivtakim b'gila, v'tishpashed l'arkar l'brachba k'viyatzer d'shivateinu. Because if we need it, then there's a skula that Eretz Yisrael will expand for our needs. It won't be bad for the people who live there. He also saw this nace. Everybody came to Yerushalayim on Shavuos, and nobody had a problem. It was beautiful. It was wonderful. There was room for everyone. Could say, that's one of the skulot of Yerushalayim, one of the skulot of Har HaBayit. And it's not, and I guess by extension, on the school of Eretz Yisrael, that it doesn't exist in real space and time. It expands to meet the needs of the time. And it contracts to not meet the needs of the time, if it's not necessary.
So 67 expanded because we need more space.
Yes.
Then more people came and there's a lot more Jews in Israel now.
We took a bunch of it. We used a bunch of it. We need a bunch of it. Not all of it.
No, so it should expand again.
So we need more now?
Well, there are more people. And there are less apartments. As you said, to shrink when we're actually going in the right.
We don't use huge chunks.
Russians are coming. The Ethiopians are coming. Syrians.
Russians are coming.
Americans come.
Russians are coming.
They were bought.
They came.
Right. And the Ethiopians came, and the Syrians came, and the this came, and okay. That came, and now the Americans are slowly coming, and the
are
whoever
they?
They're slowly coming.
5,000 a year.
We are getting
good.
Build
them up
at
Shemesh Kimo.
We are growing.
Really need,
so
we need more land?
Think that we need it in 67, for sure we need it now.
We need more land?
If you think that we got 67 borders because we needed more land, then now we need even more.
I don't know. You think so?
What do you mean even more? No, it's statistical. Statistics. Statistics say there are more Jews today than there ever were.
There's lies, there's terrible lies, there's statistics.
It's not true.
Now I want to finish this piece today, but he's going to go back to where he started. Let's go back to where we were. The Masha Ochachti, that which I proved, Shagula Teaseh Bevichina Lo Zachu. When the Gula is done in the manner of Lo Zachu, Az Hi Teaseh Bederech HaTeva. Kol Abba Bederech HaTeva, Ein Abba Tachata Lo Tel Beitu Zman. Remember, we said it's going to be done in a natural way. And since it's done in a natural way, it takes time. It happens through natural means, through the process of history. And it happens, it develops.
How
develops.
Does a mountain flatten in a natural way?
No.
In Modine, if you take a look at what they were doing, the reason why they built Modi and why they built Modi in part. Not only because of the fact that
I was going to say this, but this is an awesome answer.
But because it's non-arable land, because it's all filled with rocks and things like that. They built a city on it, because it's great for building cities, it's just not good for farming. If you look in the Suvivot of Modin, what a lot of people did is they actually started clearing the rock. And if you clear the rock and make space in between, they were able to start farming a lot of that land and found it to produce quite well. Even though it's not like you flatten a mountain, you clear up enough space to be able to make it arable.
I would say, I don't know if you meant this, but today we can build on mountains in ways that no one ever could. You don't think so? You don't buy that?
That's not what it says.
What?
That's not what it says. It says in a natural way.
He also said the Chachamim spoke.
Going to flatten.
Excuse me. He said the Chachamim spoke with Divrei Havai. Divrei Havai means they spoke in a way of exaggeration, of illustration.
Well, Kanfen Sharm for the Ethiopians is a great thing.
I don't think everything so literally.
Well, Kanfen Sharm. No. The Ethiopians, with whatever knowledge they had, when they were taken, uplifted to Israel, the quotes that you could see from the time was that they believed that.
Wasn't really an eagle.
From their perspective, it was. Except
it was
like
a Rolls Royce.
They didn't, at the time, they didn't understand what these methods would have been. So, but from their perspective, it's like
they weren't so backwards. They saw technology. They've seen airplanes.
Yeah, but they didn't flatten mountains to create arable land. They couldn't move boulders.
If you were working in the Chumash, I mean, that there were coming airplanes, nobody would know what he's talking about.
Correct. Say to flatten mountains. I don't think you have to literally. I mean, I don't know if you have to literally flatten a mountain in order to make it meaningful.
You could say, and they'll build on the mountains.
It's a poetry challenge.
Right. I don't think it means flatten. It means you'll be the land will expand and contract. Do you not see that that's possible? Do we not witness the land expanding and contracting without actually physically expanding and contracting?
I don't tie into 67.
What?
I don't see it as a natural miracle.
You don't see the land expanding and contracting meaning the borders expanding and contracting? You think that the land physically, in order to fulfill this, has to physically expand?
No, there's two arguments. Either it is that we're now more advanced and therefore we can use more land, and that's great. Like we can
forget that.
We can bring people.
You don't think it could refer to the? You don't think it could refer to the borders expanding to meet the needs of the Jewish people? And that's what he says happened in Shlomo's time. That's the land expanding.
I believe that will happen. I believe that will happen. The question is, what are we saying what happened because of us, or are we saying because of a miracle?
He says it will happen now. Now it's going to happen because of us. Slowly, slowly, naturally. Derech nes derech melubash vateva. Miracle dressed in nature.
Right. Which is a miracle. Which is
dressed in nature.
Dressed in nature, like the
six-day war. What?
The sea split.
No. Nes melubash vateva means a hidden miracle. A miracle that doesn't look like a miracle. It's not an overt miracle. It's a miracle for he who looks at it that way, like the Six-Day War. You understand? It's a miracle that's hidden. This is the geula that we're in. That's what he says. Achabala gomosh debar. Pirush hagon Rabbi Mendel Azal Midesh. Mashamu lo zachu beita. Right? If they don't merit, it'll be in its time. Hanu beita ehakavua lechol po LTV. Atitugmar pula b'shleimut. If we don't merit, then it'll be beita in its time, meaning in its natural progression, as time progresses. Achshav niskati, remembered. Diyesh raya la divara, mi divay rashi b'gemara shabay tila. Remember the Gemara says, Rabbi Yoshua Malevi Rami, he asked, k'tiv b'ita u'k'tiv achishana. So was the answer. Zachu, if they merit. Achishana, lo zachu b'ita. Amar Alexandrai, Rabbi Yoshua Malevi Rami, Yoshua Malevi says, k'tiv va'aru im anane shemaya. Okay? They will rise up with the, rise up? Does he have it? You have it? The aru im anane shemaya. Something with the clouds of heavens. U'k'tiv, Ani Baruch Ivachamor. Remember, we had that contradiction. Is it that it was going to be in the like flyover with the clouds in heaven, or is it going to be the donkeys, the white donkeys? Okay. Zachu. So Gemara answers Zachu. Im Anan Nishmaya. Lo Zachu. Ani Baruch Ivachamor. Rashi on page there. Rashi says Im Anan Nishmaya in with the clouds in heavens. Bimihi root quickly. Lo Zachu Baruch Ivachamor. If not, ki ani habal chamor ba'atzlut, right? It's like the guy on the donkey. Have you ever drive around, like when I drive to Elkanah every day, there's always like these Arabs on the donkey. You ever see the Arabs on the donkeys on the side of the road? You can whip the donkey from here to tomorrow. He ain't going faster than a certain amount. So just take your sweet time. Hainu kanal, this im zachu, if we married Yalpi, nes nigla b'mihirut b'batachat. It'll be immediate right away. V'zeo sheyavo im ananei shemaya, it'll come with a sky, clouds in the heavens. Shemorel Koach Shamayim, that refers to the heavenly force. It'll be instantaneous, quick, and single serving. Lo zachu, they don't merit. Az yavoy de chumriyot hateva, that'll be through the physicality of nature. It'll take his time. Because it depends on the developments of history. That rolls from one issue to another, one force causes another force in history until everything is finished. Even in Ezra's times, they should have had a miracle. Rather, sin caused them. What's the sin? What was the sin in Ezra's time that prevented them? Didn't come. Exactly the point. Since they were not in that framework of zachu, it had to be nes, again that term, nes milubash bateva, miracle disguised in nature, with the permission of the local government. Okay, milubash yeshua batachad mizman kimat happened step by step. And then, by the way, it was relatively quick. 18 years later, they already built the Beit HaMikdash. V'achar kach bana nechem yechom atayir. Harei dehaya la'at la'at. Slowly, slowly, v'akol yamach machayah b'mchinat ha-teva. And there, it was all in the form of nature. Shelo yirin shi'asu nes nigle, sh'az haya akol v'vat l'chad. They were not worthy of an evoked miracle. As I said, k'mo kein b'gula achrona. This is how it's going to be. Sh'abo v'onotenu harabim anu b'mchinat lo zachol. We are in the aspect of we're not meritorious. Sheveti mi midrash shamar kodesh baruch Hu. God said, "Imastakel b'maseihem." If I look at their actions, lo yigalu l'olam, they'll never get it. Okay, mechuach liot derech teva. Okay, yavu la'at la'at kasher heveti l'malo. Okay, so he says. I mean, as I said to you before, he said this before, but he felt the need. He's like, "Oh yeah, I remember the Rashi I wanted to tell you, so I wrote it down." Like you know, if he had a word processor today, he would have taken that piece and cut and pasted it back over in, you know, the first chapter. But he doesn't, so he repeated it. Umizeh, and it gets interesting. Tshuva guluya l'chol tza'akat Adonenu v'Rabbeinu Hagaon Hakadot ba Minchas Elazar. Minchas Elazar, anybody know what that is? He tells you. Mi Munkach. The Minchas Elazar was a Munkach Rebbe. Okay, the Minchas Elazar, not a very big proponent of building the land of East Israel.
Not a lot of people in Munkach were.
What?
Not a lot of people in Munkach were.
Yeah, Munkachers were not. Al-Inyan, but remember, what's most interesting, what's very interesting is how important is it to Rav Teichtel that the Minchas Elazar was the anti? Meaning, do you walk around worrying, oh, the Minchas Elazar says I should have moved here? You know what I mean? Right, okay, no. You have your Rebbe, I have my Rebbe. The problem Rav Teichtel had was his Rebbe, Ki'ilu, was the Minchas Elazar. So he has to figure out how could I, meaning, and it's less for us. Yeah, we live in a certain world. Of course, we have allegiance to our Rabbanim. But in the Hasidic world, it's a totally different ballgame. You listen to the Rebbe. Whatever the Rebbe says, that's what you do. You don't have an opinion that contradicts the Rebbe's opinion. You know what I'm saying? And here he comes along and says, Minchas Elazar, he's coming out and saying, he's writing a whole book disagreeing with an explicit instruction and teaching of a revered Hasidic Rebbe. How dare you do that? He says, I was in his heichal. I was in his congregation, his community, or kuvav. V'yadati, I knew. He wanted Mashiach to come with miracles and amazing wonders. And if you do something, if you build the land of Israel, then what are you essentially saying? I don't think America is going to happen.
You're not reliant on it.
Correct. Kasher calls for Amalim, is there? You read all his books. Okay, Sa'ak Kikrunya, he cried, he screamed like a crane. Alzeh. Aval Kvodo Bimkomo Munach. This is like blasphemy for a person to write this, for Munkach Chassid to write against the Minchas Elazar. Kvodo Bimkomo Munach. He should have his kavod. Hu B'Madregato Gidola. Meaning, it's a very brilliant teretz. Oh, how could you disagree with the Minchas Elazar?
He's not.
I'm not disagreeing. The Minchas Elazar was here. This is actually a very accurate criticism sometimes of great people. I have found it. I found it especially acute with some of my Rabbanim in Yeshiva, who just, how do you get to be a Rosh Yeshiva or a Rebbe in a big Yeshiva? No, not just. You also have to know something. Okay. Right? Let's say, by the way, you're not the son-in-law of the Rosh Yeshiva. Then how do you get to be a Rosh Yeshiva? You better be good. You know what I'm saying? And many of the places that I learned, some of the places, people were really good. I mean, unbelievable. And I found, on a few rare occasions, I have Rabbeim were not able to relate to the idea that I thought what the heck they were talking about. Or, if I learned something 3 months ago, I didn't remember every Shita and the Rishonim on the Sugya. Be like, if I remember 3 hours ago. You know what I'm saying? And you find this sometimes. People who are great people have little tolerance for people who are not as great as them or as quick as them or as, you know what I'm saying? They're not able to perceive, well, why can't you do it? I could do it.
You just learned this in Brachot.
Did we?
See, I was paying attention.
See? Today, this week?
Yeah.
In this context? And we spoke about the Siyur Moshe.
You only give Chachma to somebody who has Chachma in them already. You can't relate to somebody who doesn't have Chachma. You can't teach somebody who doesn't really have Chachma.
All right. I don't know if I was thinking about it in that way, but I'll give it to you. See, you weren't listening. Okay. Very impressive. And baby, gum babysitting and gum listening. So, but it's a great out. It's a great out. How dare you disagree with the Minchas Elazar? I'm not disagreeing with him. Of course the Minchas Elazar was right. But he wasn't able to see the world because he lived in this amazing, you know, he lived in the world of the Chassidish Rabbanim. Sadly, the whole world does not consist of Chassidish Rebbeim, of Munkacha Rebbis, consists of regular people. Of Abba Emet, Hador Acharon, who, if the real generation, the last generation, the truth, but Avonotenu HaRabim, in our great sadness, our great sinfulness, Bibchinat Lo Zacha. It's not meritorious. Then it's going to be natural. Moshe Veit B'Shem O'Archaim HaKadosh, Shekata B'Firushkein, Tim Lo Zachu, Yebeteva.
How's that last blasphemous?
What?
How's it last blasphemous?
Oh, it's not. It's not.
It's just like it's a platitude. I mean, it's basically saying, "I'm fine." So he didn't agree with me, and therefore he's wrong. Well, he's not wrong because he's in a high level, and therefore he couldn't see everybody else. So basically, what he's saying is that Rebbe, are out of touch with your congregants.
Let me tell you.
That's probably a worse blasphemy
Let me tell you a story.
Of a rabbi of a congregation.
Let me tell you a story. I was in high school. And the Rosh Yeshiva of Ner Yisrael, it was not Rav Ruderman, it was, and later Rosh Yeshiva after Rav Ruderman died, came to give a drasha, a shir, in our shul. A bunch of people came. And of course, I didn't know any better, so he said something that didn't make sense to me. Like, I think he made a mistake. And so I asked him, I caught him on it. I didn't caught him on it, I asked him about it. And he gave an answer that kind of dodged the question. Mm-hmm. And so I was speaking to one of my Rebbeim afterwards, and I was upset because he didn't answer my question. He said, of course you didn't answer your question, because you didn't ask the question properly. Because the way you asked the question, you challenged him. Of course he's going to dodge your question. You challenged, who are you? You're challenging the Rosh Yeshiva in the middle of the Shir? He said, no, the way you have to say it is, like it was obvious that he had misquoted or made a mistake or whatever. He said, the way you have to say it is, no, I'm sorry, I don't understand. I don't understand what the Rebbe said. Could the Rebbe explain it to me again? You understand what I'm saying? There's a difference between saying,
maybe
I can say you made a mistake, or I can say, I don't understand what you're trying to say. Can you please explain it again?
For not understanding that.
What?
The problems with me for not understanding.
Yes.
Doesn't it change? It doesn't change the approach. Doesn't change the reality.
Yes. That's exactly true. You're saying you're wrong, but the difference between saying you're wrong or saying I am not able to understand your way of thinking.
Yeah, but basically what he's basically saying
is
on such a high level that he's out of touch with his congregation.
His congregation, but the whole world.
All the more so. So then
that's his job. That, isn't that his job as a Rebbe?
Isn't that
the tragedy of all leadership? Isn't that what Moshe Rabbeinu's fatal flaw was? And I spoke about it in this context, but it was like, that was an issue for me in the Rabbinate. A big issue for me in the Rabbinate. Because on the one hand, it's really, how should I say this? When you're somewhat normal, like you aspire to be liked by people, and you want to get along with the guys. You know what I'm saying? Like you want to, they're all joking around, they're all enjoying time at the kiddush or at the football game or whatever. And you want to be a normal human being and have a social interaction with the people. But on the other hand, you can't, because they need you not to. Even on my little low level, they need you to be the rabbi. They don't want you to hear their bad jokes or their dirty jokes or their, you know what I'm saying? Or their poker game. Or they don't want you there. They want you to be the rabbi. They want you to be, in a sense, aloof and different from them, because they look to you at times when they don't want their friend. They want someone as a leader.
Doesn't mean you can't be in touch with people. A rabbi who's just...
Of course it means that.
No, it doesn't.
It undoubtedly means that. When you live in a world where you have to be separate from people, you just can't know where they're from.
And then one of your congregants came over to you with a particular...
Do you really want the President of the United States to know what it means to suffer in the recession, to lose his house, or foreclose on the White House?
Preferably.
Really?
Which almost happened, by the way.
You understand what I'm saying?
Still, but it's different, because if one of your congregants came over to you, even if they were with
George W. Bush the first lost the first election, and they knew that he lost, they took him on a tour of like a supermarket on the campaign. And he went to the supermarket, and they were doing the checkout with the people, and then the lasers, you know what I'm saying? And he's like, wow, what is that thing? And it had been out for like 15 years. But they realized the last time he ever went shopping for himself, and it wasn't a servant buying him groceries, had been before they had those laser things. And that was when they knew he was going to lose. Because he was so out of touch with normal people that he'd never been in a supermarket.
All the more so. I'm sure saying.
This is what this is about now.
Rabbi, if you have... All right, look.
That's what he's the mooncatcher Rebbe. He's the mooncatcher Rebbe. How is he supposed to know?
No, but how many stories do we hear? How many stories do we hear?
We've established that there are two ways from Mashiach to come.
Yeah.
Either because we're really good and miracles are going to happen.
We're awesome. Pop, right.
You know, according to Aaron, the heavenly dust is going to come out of the sky and land, and everybody's going to be hunky-dory, so we're going to be fine.
See, correct.
Because we're working, we merit it.
It's 52? 52?
Which is this Rebbe's opinion.
Right.
Or you can go down Ralph Tocqueville's answer, which is he's seeing all this horror and devastation around him. And he goes, you know something, guys? We're really not very good people. It's really not going to come the way. We're really never going to get there for the miraculous, right? So let's be practical.
Bottom line.
It's going to come.
Was the moon...
One day, when... Not when
through nature. Was the mooncatcher Rebbe wrong or not?
How inspiring is that for you to stand up to your community and say, basically, guys, you've got no hope of bringing Mashiach because you're good. You're all a bunch of Rashaim.
Not you're all a bunch of Rashaim. No. Not you're, that's not fair. You can't be that way. Not you're a bunch of Rashaim. The world is full of Rashaim.
The world is
a bunch of Rashaim. I
understand
what you're saying. The bottom line is, he's still saying he's wrong.
But no, what I'm saying is that there's, he's still saying he's wrong, but he's saying it, I think, in an even more scathing way. Because basically, if you're a Rav, they're not going to invite you to the poker games. But if one of those guys from the poker game comes over to you and starts talking about a Taharas Mishpacha issue, he would expect you to know what's going on in his family. Or at least have some sort of...
No, he would expect you to know the Halacha.
Granted, but let's say not a Taharas Mishpacha issue, a personal issue that he's discussing with you. You don't know enough about what's going on in the community as a Rav to give him a contextual answer to what's going on.
Yeah.
And if he's saying, sorry, you're so out of touch with your people that you have no idea what's really going on, I think that's way more scathing than saying, it's like...
He's not just,
give the guy a break.
He's not just dissing his rabbi, he's dissing everyone.
No, I don't think he's dissing everybody.
He's saying the rabbi's naive because we're really unworthy. And we're never
going to be worthy. You have to understand.
What the Hebrew says, it says here... in reality, this generation is not worthy due to our numerous sins.
How many stories have we
heard? You have to understand, he cannot, and I really mean this, he cannot and he will not overtly disagree with the Mooncatcher Rebbe. He won't. So what's his only way out? His only way out is to say he's too holy. And to mean it, I really mean it to mean it. Meaning he aspired to something that is not reasonable. But can you hold it as a fault for someone to aspire to some greatness? Is that a fault?
What else is it to aspire to?
Well, exactly.
Really, why did we come? If it's just going to happen naturally, what are we doing here?
That is it naturally. Let's come back to the same. I don't understand it. Why is that not it? That's exactly the point. Well, if it's going to happen naturally, your coming here is its doing. Is it happening naturally? That's
really?
The point.
It wasn't my decision.
Of course, it's your decision.
No, apparently it wasn't. It happened naturally.
Those are one and the same. Stop here. Continue next week.